This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're talking about sexual assault in Indiana and what organizations are doing to address the issue. If you have questions or comments on our show today, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail. Call us at 866-476-3881. Just give your name, where you're calling from, and a quick question or comment, and we will do our best to get it into the conversation. Again, 866-476-3881. We're joined live now by two guests. Tracy Krueger is the executive director of the Indiana Coalition to End Sexual Assault and Human Trafficking. Tracy, welcome. Tracy, is your mic on? All right. Rima Shahid is the executive director of Women for Change, and she joins us as well. Rima, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Really excited to be on the show today.
All right. Tracy, are you there? Tracy, your microphone might not be on. All right. Rima, we'll start with you. Can you tell me about Women for Change and the work it does specifically to address sexual assault?
Sure. Again, happy to be here today. Women for Change is a nonpartisan grassroots organization, and our mission is to educate, equip, and mobilize women to create positive change here in Indiana. Some of the issues that we look at are ones that we believe affect women in Indiana, regardless of location, age, but also political affiliation. And I think that this one is one of those that really cuts across all of those. One of the things that we did last year, exactly a year ago, we stood on the steps of the State House and launched an art project that's called El Tendedero, or the Clothesline. And it was modeled after a Mexican artist by the name of Monica Mayer, who in the late 70s collected postcards and hung them on a line that is a clothesline. That's a traditionally female role. And that's what we did is we collected postcards from across Indiana. And in March, we put them up and we collected over 1,600 postcards from all 92 counties.
And so what are the postcards say? I mean, what are the postcards for?
Some of the postcards were from survivors of sexual assault and rape and talking about their experiences. Other postcards were completed. Their pink postcards were completed and put up from allies. There were others that were just asking for and recognizing this ongoing need to have comprehensive consent legislation here in Indiana. And so again, by collecting over 1,600 postcards from all 92 counties, it just shows that growing need. We had partners from art organizations, theater organizations, all the way to civics organizations that really wanted to heighten and bring attention to this issue here in our state.
Tracy, do we have you now?
I think I'm here.
All right. You are there. Tracy Krueger is the executive director of the Indiana Coalition to End Sexual Assault and Human Trafficking. And we've been talking to Rima about the Clothesline project. And let's start with you on talking about the prevalence of sexual assault and sexual violence in Indiana. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Share some statistics.
Well, of course I can. And again, I want to thank you for this opportunity to participate in the program. In Indiana, the majority of the sexual violence cases that happen are not reported. But what we do know, and when you consider that it's the least reported crime, these statistics are even more alarming, that in Indiana, similar to across the nation, 1 in 5 women will be sexually assaulted in their lifetime. And across the nation, 1 in 71 men will also be sexually assaulted at some point in their lifetime. So it's a tremendous problem. It carries quite a bit of stigma, which is why people are not willing to come forward and report. But it is something that, as a state, we definitely need to address.
And when we look at particular communities like the LGBTQ community or communities of color and younger people, how do those numbers change?
Well, unfortunately, marginalized communities are at very high risk of sexual violence. First of all, it's very important to understand that the violence is not about sex. It's about having control over another person. And it's really rooted in oppression. And so, within oppression, the marginalized communities tend to be more at risk. So it increases among the LGBTQ community. It's very prevalent in the Black community. It's very prevalent in communities where they are of a lower income status, lower education status. And it's just, it's tremendous. It's a tremendous hardship on everyone, but especially on marginalized communities, because they also may not, they may not be as willing to access services to help them in their healing.
Rima, what did representation among marginalized communities look like within, within the Clothesline Project? How much interest did you get from those groups?
We had a lot of interest from those groups because, again, I think that this is one issue, like many others, that does affect minorities at a much higher rate, which is my understanding. And Tracy, please correct me if I'm wrong. And so we did have this growing demand from folks to have access to these postcards. And the questions written on the postcards were, you know, have you experienced sexual assault and where do you feel safe? And what really stuck out to us was the number of postcards to the question of where do you feel safe? And the answer was nowhere. I don't feel safe. I don't feel safe in my home. And that was really a gut punch to us. Again, in March, we displayed the clothesline in the State House, and it was just days before we went into shutdown. We had a little girl that came up to me. She couldn't have been older than 5, 6 years old. And she asked me if she could write out a postcard. And I asked her, I said, you know, you really have to ask your mom. I can't give you permission to do that. So her mother came over and told me that this little girl was, again, 5 to 6 years old, had been sexually assaulted. And they drove down from what we call the region just to attend that press conference and to participate. That still brings tears to my eyes and just shows why this is so important. This little girl was 5 to 6 years old, had experienced sexual assault, and wanted to be there to make her voice heard and shown and participate in that.
Tracy, what does that say about the resilience of some people to, especially if you're affected at such a young age, to then be in a position where she's still very young and but able and wanting and willing to advocate for this sort of thing?
Well, it's tremendous. And I'll tell you, the statistics also show that children who are victimized at a young age are at an exponentially higher rate to be victimized again. It also, either in their teen years or in their adult years, and it also can absolutely impact their development into adulthood, with many of them ending up with lifelong issues related to the sexual assault. It also puts them at higher risk for quote unquote risky behavior. What's remarkable about that situation with the story that Rima just shared is that she came, she was open about it. Her family apparently was open about it, or whoever is in her sphere. And that speaks volumes to that little girl's future, because so often families don't want to talk about this. They don't want people to know. Oftentimes, not always, but in many cases, the abuser is actually a family member or a family friend. And there's that increases the lack of interest in letting anyone know what's happening. So the kids are left to bear that and internalize that for years and years to come. So that's very powerful that little girl wanted to participate, and that she was in a situation where she was allowed to participate. And that's really, honestly, that's really, those are the examples that we need to see more of, because if we can have an open dialogue about the prevalence of sexual violence and the root causes of the violence, then we can actually reduce the incidences and eventually eliminate sexual violence. But we have to be willing to have tougher conversations than what we're having right now.
We're talking about an example of sexual assault among a child. But what do we know about sexual assault, Tracy, among high school girls? Do you have numbers there?
Well, this is the one that really is very shocking for Indiana. We're fourth highest in the nation for the number of girls who are raped in high school. These are girls that are between the 9th and 12th grades. And it's just unfathomable to me that statistic exists. However, it's not necessarily surprising because of our, again, because of the stigma that's attached to sexual assault and the burden that the girls will have to bear if they come forward and report the incident or the rape. It always comes back to the victim and something that the victim did to perpetuate the crime. You know, we call it victim blaming, and people don't want to take that on. They have enough to deal with just the trauma of the rape, let alone having to defend themselves against a crime that they certainly weren't asking for. So until we can really have conversations around the culture, the rape culture that exists, and also talking to the perpetrators or the potential perpetrators about their behavior rather than putting it on the victim, then we're going to get somewhere.
Just a little over a minute left, Tracy. I wonder if you might talk about a little more about what the coalition is doing statewide to bring awareness to the issue of sexual assault.
Oh, I'd be delighted to. We, the coalition, we do our work is across the spectrum. So first of all, we work very hard to increase the access to services for victims throughout the state, no matter where they are in their healing journey. The other thing that we have to address within sexual violence is, yes, there's the initial horrible incident and making sure that they have appropriate treatment and care for that. But oftentimes people don't really want or reach out for some sort of help or advocacy until 10, 20, 30 years until after the event. So we have to make sure that we have services available throughout their healing journey, no matter where it is. So we do that. But secondly, we just are very committed to trying to reduce the incidences and move toward a state that prevents sexual violence. And so we've created a prevention curriculum that actually is primarily working with college men. We currently are working with athletic departments at various universities. We also do bystander intervention work so that we get communities and students and young people to understand the importance of intervening when appropriate and when not putting themselves in harm's way. So, and we're having more in-depth conversations about rape culture and how
we'll be back with more from our guests after a quick break. We're talking about two organizations pushing for a legal definition of consent in Indiana. If you'd like to jump in, you can leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelzer. Before we get back to today's show, I want to share some news. You can now interact with the show in a new way. Download the All In Vox Pop app. When you do that, you can record a high-quality audio file and get it to us to interact with our guests. Although it won't work for today's panel, we should be able to start working with that next week. But while you're thinking about it, go to the App Store or Google Play or whatever, however you get apps, and download the All In Vox Pop app so that you can use high-quality audio to interact with our guests on future shows. Today, we're talking about two organizations working to improve the state's response to sexual assault. And we would love your questions and comments on the topic. You can do that by interacting with us on our social media platforms, Facebook and Twitter. Our handles are All In Indiana. Or you can leave us a voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. 866-476-3881. And we would love to hear your voice in the conversation today, especially if you or someone you know or love has been impacted by sexual assault. Tracy, just before the break, you were talking about how the coalition, your coalition, the Indiana Coalition to End Sexual Assault and Human Trafficking is working to bring statewide awareness to this issue. And you also shared some numbers with us earlier, and I think people might be shocked to hear the numbers of people impacted by sexual violence. But what I would really like to get into is maybe how those numbers have changed at all in the past few years.
You know, I think I can speak for Indiana. Actually, the numbers have stayed fairly consistent with an increase in we have been seeing a steady increase in the number of reports among marginalized communities. We are hearing a lot more about sexual assault which is great, which is good, because it raises awareness and it really gets us to be thinking about addressing the reality of this crime. But what we still are not having as many people report the crime. And also, along with that, is that we're not very good as a state at collecting the data in a manner in which we can really see if we are seeing any increases or decreases. And we're getting better at that. We're in partnership with some organizations that are really working on this collection data piece, which is great. But it's really remained the 1 in 5 women fairly consistently for a while. The statistic I shared about the high school rate, the fourth highest in the nation, that has been at fifth. That's been at, you know, that has moved a little bit, but the others have remained fairly consistent. But I think it's because while our awareness is being raised and we're hearing more about it, we're still not seeing as many people as we'd like to see accessing services, or certainly not reporting it to law enforcement.
Tracy, how are we able to estimate or determine the number of cases that are that go unreported?
There's a statistic that 85% of the cases in our state are unreported. I cannot in good conscience sit here and tell you how, I don't know how that number is formulated, so I don't want to misspeak. But that is the standard, that is the statistic that that's been collected from, and I have to look and do my research on that, but that is the number that we typically use, is that 85% of the cases aren't reported. Now, that could be gathered from where people might seek medical attention but are not reporting it to the police. Mm. So that's probably how that figure comes about, but I don't want to misspeak.
Rima, Women for Change is one of the many organizations pushing for legislation around a statewide definition of consent. Why do you think this change is needed in Indiana?
As I was talking about that little girl, I think that there are thousands of stories like that. That's what we've seen over the course of this project, the Clothesline Project, and I think it's so important that we pass this legislation. I think some of the statistics that Tracy shared earlier are why we need to pass this legislation. And for more of these statistics and to understand, we've put together an issue-based voting guide that includes some of this information. You can find it on our website at womenforchange4changeindiana.org. And I would encourage you to look at that, understand that. More and more, what I've found is that people don't know about these statistics. When I have conversations, Tracy mentioned the power of having conversations and awareness. When I'm having conversations with people, they don't know about these alarming statistics. And once they find out, they want to take action. And to be able to take action on that voting guide, it's interactive. You can click a button and contact your state representatives and just talk to them about this issue and why it's so important. What we've seen is that citizens' action is meaningful and it's important, and we need your help in getting this done.
How would a definition of consent change the way sexual assaults looked at in a court?
Rima, may I hop in on this one?
Of course.
Thank you. So I think what's helpful currently in Indiana, sex without consent is not a crime. And it's that way within the law that we currently have, the statute that currently is written, that you have to have an additional element that you have to prove that force or threat of force or incapacitation for a crime, for a crime to have been committed. So in other words, the victims have to prove that they did not consent to being raped and that they essentially had to fight off their rapist. So the expectation is that a sexual assault victim should not only have to be able to fight off their attacker, it's in stark contrast to years of research on trauma and neurobiology of trauma. And it also, there's no other crime where there's a legal expectation that you have to fight off your attacker to prove that in fact a crime was perpetrated. So it really, what it does is it once again puts the onus on the victim for doing everything that they possibly could to not be raped, when in in fact, the neurobiology of trauma sometimes impacts, definitely impacts the victim's reactions. And also they could be incapacitated. They could be passed out. Well, you know that no consent was given when that has occurred. So it makes it problematic for victims to feel confident in seeking any kind of legal recourse. The other thing is it makes it very difficult to hold perpetrators accountable, which then, of course, can increase the risk of repeatedly offending. So it's that's why we want a consent definition, because no means no doesn't really matter in Indiana based on the law that is currently written. We preach no means no, but they don't have the legal backing. If in fact they said no and were still raped and there was no proof of force or threat of force.
Rima, do we know how other states define consent?
I think that Indiana would be ahead. That's my understanding when passing this legislation. But what the statistics will show is that we have an ever-growing need to address this within our state. And going back to the previous question, I also think it's important for the state to send a message, not only to perpetrators or potential perpetrators, but also to all of the people living in our state, that our state will protect you and there are laws to protect you. I think that's really, really important, because as awareness is growing around this issue, there's also a sense of unease and a sense of anxiety around it, because there's that protection is not there currently. And I think that's very important that we do that.
Rima, how long have organizations like yours, Women for Change, been pushing for a definition of consent here in Indiana?
Well, I know that Tracy and her organization, they've been at it for far longer. Women for Change, we're almost at our fourth anniversary this November, but we have been focused on this issue for a little over 2 years now.
What have been the challenges that Women for Change and other organizations, what have they faced when I guess first calling for this change in legislation, when it was first brought up?
I think that there is, again, a lack of awareness, but there's also a lack of understanding how important citizens play a role in making changes and amendments to legislation. And so that's what we've been really focused on. And again, our mission is to equip and mobilize women and ask them to participate in civic and political life. And that's so important. The power that one individual has, contacting your representative, filling out a postcard, but it's just that overall sense of participating and engaging and how important that is and critical to making sure that we get this job done.
There was a bill proposed last year, Rima, about defining consent. Can you tell me about that one?
There was a bill in 2020 session, and it's now being studied during the interim study committee. We, amongst many other individuals and organizations, testified on behalf of. My understanding is that there was a little bit of gray area that they were really hoping to have tightened up before passing that piece of legislation. And so we're really thankful for the opportunity of it being heard in the interim study committee, and hopefully hoping for that recommendation so we can get that law passed in 21.
And we'll hear a little bit more about that in the next segment. Tracy, can you talk about the intersection of your organization's work around sexual assault and human trafficking?
There's quite a bit of intersection between sexual violence and human trafficking. Often, many cases, people who've been sexually violated, as I stated earlier, are repeatedly violated, and they become at a higher risk for victimization. And traffickers are very smart and savvy, and they know how to, in a very dark way, are they smart and savvy, and they're able to really find people that are feel marginalized, feel like they don't belong, feel like or they've been victimized, and they recruit them. And there are very strong intersections between the two. So we address, we do work with all the organizations across the state that work with trafficked survivors, And what we've done is we've tried to collaborate with the sexual assault services across the state. So, for example, rape crisis centers are now, they've gone through extensive training on how to work with trafficked survivors, because it's a very different approach in working with folks who've been trafficked. And so we're really trying to make sure that we're streamlining all of our services so that they're comprehensive and seamless across the state, so that they can work with both both survivors of sexual violence and human trafficking.
We do have a voicemail that we'd like to put in front of Tracy and Rima. This is from Jessica asking a question about dress codes in schools.
Hi, this is Jessica from Evansville, and I wanted to comment on the incidents of high school sexual assault. And I wanted to ask the panelists what they thought about high school dress codes really focusing on young women and penalizing them for the way they dress and putting the focus on the fact that it seems to be their fault or not okay to wear things. Instead, I feel like the culture should be asking boys to behave themselves. And I'm wondering if there's any programs to go into the high schools and maybe get rid of some of these really draconian dress codes. Thank you.
Rima, we all know what Jessica's talking about. Any comment on that?
Yeah, I think that this goes back to what Tracy was mentioning earlier on victim blaming. Mm-hmm. I mean, high school girls, I think we've all heard incidents of them wearing tank tops or other clothing and that being an invitation. And I could not disagree with that more. I think that there is an overall rape culture that exists, not just in our state, but across our nation and world, that we really need to look at and think about the conversations that we're having with young people around their dress, and that being an invitation or lack thereof to some sort of assault or blaming, is just completely unacceptable.
I echo that 1,000%. It's absolutely unacceptable. And it is putting the focus on the wrong thing. So a young girl wears a tank top to school and she's a distraction to the boys. Well, okay, then why are we, let's talk to the boys. Really? That's a distraction. I mean, this is what we constantly do this. We shift the focus away from what the true meaning of sexual violence is. And it's about power and control, and it's about oppression. And it's about talking about these behaviors and what is acceptable and what is not at earlier ages. Lessons around consent can start with toddlers, and it doesn't have to be about sexual assault. It's just, how do we live and breathe and work together in a world where we're not victimizing and we're not sexualizing and we're not stigmatizing. And that's really, I agree with the caller, and I think that that's one place where we need to do some serious work.
I also, just to quickly piggyback off of that, I'm sorry, Adam,
Please,
we really need to think about, even in toddlers, I've seen in the boys section, there'll be little onesies for newborns that say, ladies man, or Mr. Steal Your Girl. Like this, yeah. we're starting mm-hmm. these conversations from such a young age. But on the flip side, if you go into the baby girl section, do you ever see like man stealer on any clothes? No, you don't. And so we're instilling this, or we'll take a little baby into an office and say, oh, look, he's such a flirt. He's flirting with me. That's complete nonsense and ridiculous. And as we see that, Mr. Steal Your Girl, later in high school, it's about girls' clothes and what they're wearing. And later in life, well, she was out drinking too late. Well, mm-hmm. she was a little bit tipsy. Why was mm-hmm. she out walking? We don't have these conversations with men as we do with women. And it starts from birth, and it has to stop.
Tracy, we're going to get into Senate Bill 146 a little bit in the next segment. I guess as a precursor to that, and we only have a couple minutes left, what kind of challenges do people face when trying to access social services after they've been assaulted?
Well, we're working very hard to make sure that they can, that every county in the state has access to some kind of sexual assault service. When the coalition started 5 years ago, there were 3 designated rape crisis centers, which provided service to 10 of our state's 92 counties. We've through lots of hard work and lots of wonderful partnerships, including our legislators who funded our Sexual Assault Victims Assistance Fund. We've been able to increase that number to 13, covering 47 counties. So we've made great strides in 5 years, but access is still very difficult for folks, specifically in the rural parts of our state. And we are really working on developing those partnerships to make sure that folks know that there's a place where they can go, whether certainly if they need medical treatment, where are the hospitals or the medical facilities that have sexual assault nurse examiners? And then secondly, where are the advocacy organizations that can walk with them through their journey? And we're getting better, but we have a long way to go.
Well, I want to thank our two guests very much for the discussion today. Tracy Krueger is the executive director of the Indiana Coalition to End Sexual Assault and Human Trafficking. Tracy Krueger, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure.
Rima Shahid is the executive director of Women for Change. Rima, thanks for your work and thanks for your time today.
Thank you very much for having me.
We will be back after a quick break talking with a state representative about the current legislation around sexual assault. And if you have questions or comments, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana, or leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881, 866-476-3881. And we will be back with that in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelzer. Back now to our discussion on legislation around sexual assault in Indiana. As always, we would love your questions and comments for the discussion. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a short voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. 866-476-3881. We're now joined by Wendy McNamara, a member of the Indiana House of Representatives, representing the 76th District. Representative McNamara, welcome.
Thank you very much.
So you're chairing the Interim Study Committee on Corrections and Criminal Code. How did this study committee come about?
The Corrections and Criminal Code Committee is a standing committee that exists in the interim for looking at policies that might not be heard during session for lack of time or needing more time to actually look at it and digest. So anything that's involving a criminal matter would go through this committee, and in alternate years, the chair of Courts and Criminal Code from the House will be the chair, and this is my year.
What is the committee looking at right now on this issue of sexual assault?
During the legislative session, there was a bill introduced on consent, there are some concerns of the language itself just around that. So the importance of the Interim Study Committee is the ability, and I guess the good thing about the Interim Study Committee is the ability to do deep dives into things that are very important, such as this, and make sure that we get it right, and make sure that we're not hastily putting something up for sake of putting something up, but making sure that we get it right as we go through.
In what ways is the language of the proposal you're talking about vague or problematic in any way?
So just to kind of give you some context, there's about five states that don't have any type of consent laws. And then there's nine states that have or require a person to give an affirmative yes before any sexual activity. And this bill was along those sort of lines. And the question becomes, does that mean that every time somebody engages in a sexual activity, is an affirmative yes going to be necessary? Doesn't mean that the language is wrong, but we want to make sure that we parse out what we need to, because when it comes down to that definition, it has to be absolutely critical for a prosecutor to be able to prosecute. And we don't want somebody to slip through if we have vagueness or uncertainty in that. Indiana is among the majority of states that define sexual contact without consent as the sexual assault legislation. I think both Rima and Tracy alluded to that person has to be compelled by force or imminent threat of force. And I think probably the best thing for us to do is to make sure we're very intentional about determining how we're going to define it. And that's where the critical points are.
I can see where it could get really confusing or, I don't know, even alarming to think that someone in, and I'm sure that this has been said a lot, in the heat of the moment would have to provide that yes. And how often is something like that discussed when talking about these complicated things?
I don't remember if it was Rima or Tracy alluded to it, but often victims of sexual assault might not even be able to speak or say, right. Just because of the trauma they're enduring. And I would not want to put something in statute that doesn't look at that. And I think that's why you see in our statute in Indiana, the by force or imminent threat of force. We do have other parts of the code that talk about people who might have mental disabilities or be unconscious, like due to a rape drug or something like that. So we're just trying to be very conscientious of putting forth any type of legislation to make sure that we can get the best outcomes for victims of sexual assault.
Why do you think it's important to be talking about these topics right now?
I'm going to be honest with you. When I first got it, I'm a teacher and a principal. This is my 26th year in education and my 10th year in the legislature. And I did not hear about human trafficking at all until I got into the legislature. I was asked to carry some legislation. The Super Bowl was coming to Indianapolis, and I was asked to carry some human trafficking legislation in response to that happening. And the conversations just don't take place. They weren't taking place. And then so throughout the years, you can see my advocation for human trafficking victims. And most recently, my legislation to require some education on behalf of teachers and educators to identify potential victims of human trafficking in their classrooms, because I was unaware until I made it to the legislature of these warning signs and symptoms and things like that. And additionally, I've had students come to me to tell me that they've been sexually assaulted. Mm. I'm often the first person they might tell. And, you know, when I was listening to the testimony, it was a taped testimony from a teenager during the interim studying committee. It just was like I was talking to my students sitting there right there in front of me. So it is critical that we recognize the mental, social, and emotional trauma that these victims go through. And I want to be cognizant of that if we place something in statute.
What did that legislation around human trafficking back in 2011, 2012, whenever it was, you said just ahead of the Super Bowl in Indianapolis, what did that look like?
We really didn't have anything in Indiana to address it, to be honest with you. And it's a $1 billion, I can't even remember the billions, I want to say $56 billion industry or even more. Wow. Worldwide, and human trafficking tends to follow sporting events in other states that had Super Bowls or major sporting events. We used a lot of their legislation to try to crack down on people that would purchase others in wake of it coming through. So we wanted to be proactive for the Super Bowl coming in, but we also wanted to make sure Indiana caught up on a lot of the discussions. And it's unfortunate it, you know, wasn't something that was people were having conversations about. And that's why I appreciate Raymond and Tracy for their advocacy, because they're bringing the conversation to Indiana. We're having these discussions, and I think really it's making an impact to make people aware of what is actually going on. And, you know, in 2016, the Attorney General did a report and there was a victim as young as 7 who had been human trafficked. So I think it's really important as a state that we recognize this and we respond. We've done a lot. I think you mentioned Senate Bill 146. I was a co-sponsor of that, and this year created a Sexual Assault Victims Bill of Rights. So we're getting there, but it's important, I think, to continue to put pressure on so that we can continue to move things forward for people who find themselves victims.
And we'll dig into SB 146 and a little bit more in a bit. But before that, can you talk us through the legislation Indiana currently has in place around sexual assault and consent? Let's get kind of a more of a comprehensive list, if we can.
So without getting too much into the weeds, a person who knowingly or intentionally has sexual intercourse with another person or forces that person to submit to other sexual conduct by force or imminent threat of force would be considered sexual assault. If the person is unaware that the sexual intercourse or other sexual conduct is occurring, that would be for people that might be unconscious or the rape drug that's often used. And a third part of it is if a person is mentally disabled or deficient, that they are unable to consent to sexual intercourse or sexual conduct can't be given. That already is covered in Indiana's code. So that's the basis of it. There are certain enhancements that are added to it if it's committed using the threat or deadly force like a weapon. Or if it results in serious bodily injury. So there's several parts to our current statute, but I think it's always important to take a look and make sure we're covering everything that we can cover.
As we mentioned, you co-sponsored Senate Bill 146, which provides rights to victims of sexual assault. And, of course, that was signed into law this past March. What did that do?
It basically required the state sexual assault team to be there as a victim advocate. Senator Doreo's mother had been a victim, and this was really came from him on advocacy for his mother. The testimony was very moving, and just having somebody there with a person who's been a victim to help them navigate through what their rights are, I think is essential. And then it also kind of works with local law enforcement agencies to be able to provide them with what their rights are and give information to victims so that they feel like they have someone to go to, someone to have a conversation with, and make sure that all of their rights are protected.
We have a voicemail that I'd like to play. This is from Adam asking how he can help a loved one.
Hello, my name is Adam. I'm calling from Kokomo, Indiana. My girlfriend of 6 months has told me multiple times that her father had sexually assaulted her and raped her when she was minor. She told me that she tried to tell her mom, and she didn't believe her. I've tried to be supportive and holding her father accountable, although she feels that there's nothing that she can do about it, or she feels like it's too late. Do you have any suggestions on what I could do now or how I could help her? Thank you.
Representative McNamara, is there a statute of limitations on sexual assault in Indiana?
No, but I think probably I'm not familiar with Kokomo, but most cities have some sort of domestic violence advocacy. Definitely Rima and Tracy would be able to connect him with resources in his community. But I think probably the most important conversation to have is just be supportive, like he said. And listen. And I think it's important that she is having the conversation with him. I'm not a psychologist or somebody that's even been trained in having conversations, but knowing that victims have trouble speaking out, often have some shame associated with them, and that might be the reason they don't speak out. It's important that he just listens and be there as a supporter to her. And again, if he wants to further that support, the local communities often have a lot of good resources that are available to victims of sexual assault.
And Adam, the organizations that were represented earlier in the show were the Indiana Coalition to End Sexual Assault and Human Trafficking and Women for Change. So we hope that you find what you're looking for where that's concerned. So where are you, Representative McNamara, and where is, I guess, the Interim Study Committee on Corrections and Criminal Code at on creating this legal definition of consent?
But I expect to see a draft come forward. But right now, I don't want to speculate on what that language might look like. We've looked at the testimony. I've been actually working on the legislation since March, trying to get a consensus over a definition. And if you look at the bill from last session, Representative Sharon Nagel, she was on that bill, and I have asked her to take the lead on this. She is as strong an advocate about it as I am, and I have every confidence in the world that she will continue to work on this and give it the time and respect that's due. We just want to make sure that it, in the end, provides justice to our victims of sexual assault, and it's something that is useful for our prosecutors to be able to use in trying these cases.
And also clear in its language, of course, which I guess is also another issue.
Absolutely.
And to the listener named Adam, who asked about his girlfriend and her past sexual assault, we just got an email from Tracy Krueger, the guest who joined us, and she said that Family Service Association is an organization based in Kokomo that could help. Again, Family Service Association, and we hope that helps. Representative McNamara, I guess one final question here. How has the pandemic affected your ability to study things like this, or really anything for that matter?
I'll be honest with you. Going into the first committee hearing, this was our very first topic. I had legislators there in person, I had legislators there on Zoom. I had testimony that occurred via video, and I had testimony occurring in a separate room altogether. The challenge is a lot of times we want to ask questions of folks, and the videotape testimony was good and bad in that good, we were able to have testimony from people we would have never had testimony from before. We had the ability to hear from folks that wouldn't have made it to the state house. The bad part about that was we couldn't ask them questions. We couldn't ask them to identify something or, further enhance our knowledge. The great part about it is we're still going through with it. You know, COVID didn't stop our ability to be able to have the conversation and take that deeper dive into it. And it was different and it was a challenge, but I think in the end we did get some very quality testimony, some very passionate testimony from victims as well as advocates. And I think it's important to see going forward.
And I think we'll have to leave it at that. Representative Wendy McNamara represents Indiana's 76th District and chairs the Interim Study Committee on Corrections and Criminal Code. Representative McNamara, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much.
Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. I'm Matt Pelser. Thanks for listening. This is All In.